Greetings and good. What is this? Late morning. My name is Chris Denson. I'm the name at the top. I'm the director of Ignition Factory, which is a group inside of Omnicom Media Group. And if you aren't familiar with OMD, it is a large media agency, and particularly they buy a lot of 30-second spots, billboards, print ads, things like that. I run a group called Ignition Factory, which is all focused on innovation, emerging platforms, technologies, new experiences. How can we get our clients to do new and interesting things in the marketplace? Which is great because I get to talk to all these guys about it and steal ideas. And this will be fun. I also host a interview series called Innovation Crush. Ironically, I just interviewed Elon Lee yesterday, so you guys will be happy to see about that. Was that? He was just, where were you? Yeah, he was just here. So we're going to have a lot of fun conversation about playing with the future. That means a lot of different things to a lot of you, I'm sure, but we'll touch on as much as we can. We were just rapping at the table, and these guys are wells of information, so we will tap them. So I'll start with Aslan. Do you want to introduce yourself and let people know who you are?
Sure, yeah. Aslan. Aslan Appleman, Senior Director of Advanced Concepts at Mattel. So I run a group of product design and marketing and strategy and technology, which essentially kind of looks for new platforms of play for our consumers based on insights and try to bring kind of emerging technologies to bear for one of our brands or just a new brand, a new way to play. So some of the things we're working on right now, the recent relaunch of ViewMaster as a virtual reality headset for kids. As well as a content ecosystem. We also partnered with the Barbie brand to bring Hello Barbie to life. So speech recognition embedded in a doll. Partnered with a company called Toy Talk out of the Bay Area for that one. And then, you know, other platforms like 3D printing and Steam and kind of coding. We're looking at a ton of the tech that's out there and trying to bring really amazing play into the Mattel portfolio.
All right. Our next most prepared panelist.
Do you want me to hold your notes?
No. Exactly.
We can read it for you.
Let me read this for you. No. I'm Erin Riley. I'm a Managing Director and Research Fellow at USC Annenberg Innovation Lab, which is a think and do fast-paced energy lab. You know, we focus on the innovative intersections of media, culture, and society. And my area of focus is mainly on fan engagement, children's media, transmedia storytelling, transmedia play and learning. Those are all things I've written about.
And it's all right here in front of you.
Joby?
I'm Joby Otero, Chief Creative Officer at Anki. Anki is a company that's all about trying to create new ways to play emerging technologies like AI and machine learning and robotics, and trying to take fantasies like you see in Toy Story, where toys come to life in a film, and try to make those things into a reality. And my role there is primarily to build and run a game studio within the larger company and to sort of bring heart to the technology. And previously I had been at Activision and helped to create the Skylanders brand, which is also another company that was about merging toys and technology. So we're trying to add to that the dimension of bringing new ways to play into the real physical world using science-grade technology, as we talked about last night.
And I'm Dan Judkins. I'm the VP of Design and Development for Integrated Play and Mobile Gaming at Hasbro. So my job is, over the past 4 years, has been to sort of change a physical toy company into a company that's thinking about digital and engaging consumers with digital experiences, and sort of coined the phrase phygital, which is physical and digital coming together. So products like Furby, where there's a heavy digital component and physical component, come together. That's kind of magical experiences. So we're doing things like that. We're developing mobile games that allow kids to connect their toys to those mobile games. And we're working with all the big brands at Hasbro.
All right. We're out of time. So everybody... No, just kidding. So I guess, you know, this conference is interesting because it's a lot of blends of technology and strategy, and obviously your guys' resumes and work portfolio is amazing. I'm curious as to, you know, how do you guys go about bridging the gap between what used to be play, right? The simplicity of it all, Lincoln Logs, right, or Rubik's Cube, versus the integration of technology. I'll start with Joby, because you've got some science-grade tech that goes into, like, very, you know, old, seemingly, styles of play.
Yeah, well, I think the old toys are still super fun. There's something fun about just getting away from technology from time to time and just getting your hands on something really tactile and just throwing stuff at a wall, throwing stuff at your brother, your friends. That's always going to be fun. But to answer your question, I think a lot of it, what we try to do is we just tinker, frankly. You know, we tinker and we see what's fun to us. And ultimately, you know, we're pretty close with our inner children. You know, and our inner children have the benefit because we're older now. They don't have a distinct bedtime as much. So we play with technology until late into the night. And then we also assess it against certain business needs and, you know, sort of the white space in the marketplace. But, you know, I'm very fortunate to work with a company like Anki where we're willing to take risks on things where there isn't always an immediate market need that we're pointing to, but there's just a magic of an idea and a piece of technology that supports that idea, and we're willing to go pretty far with that and make it work.
And even from a Mattel standpoint, right, where you have franchises like Barbie that has been around for decades, and, you know, how do you evolve that, and, like, how do you preserve some of the essence of what play used to be versus matching where the world is headed?
Yeah, look, I think the toy industry is growing, right? Analog play and analog toys are not going anywhere. I think from our perspective, and I think from everyone here, it's how do we use technology to augment and deliver, you know, kind of a more enjoyable or more immersive experience for our core consumer. So we all know our core consumer, the Barbie girl, the Hot Wheels boy, you know, and so on and so forth. And so it's not really just let's jam technology down onto traditional play patterns. It's how do we improve or deliver something new as a kid gets older, because they're so enthralled and immersed with technology in their lives.
Yeah, and speaking of, like, what we know, right? We were talking a little earlier about data, mm-hmm. you know, and the amount of information we have on what kids are doing, you know, with the toys and when they're engaging with them. Can you just speak to how that, you know, applies to what you do on a day-to-day basis?
Me?
Yep.
So, obviously, insights and the sort of the tinkering and the technology are important, but, you know, as you start to get products out there and platforms out there, and now having data to help you inform, help you make decisions, help you justify decisions that you're making, and driving those innovations forward is really, really important. Small things like, you know, with Furby Boom, we know that the biggest, most important feature in Furby Boom was Furby going to the bathroom. And kids taking Furby to the bathroom, and that was by far the most enjoyable experience for them. Data drove that because our analytics told us that. That wasn't just kids telling us that. So, you know, we now know that we have a brand that we can, you know, do different things with and push the boundaries.
Would a kid tell you that he took his toy into the bathroom, or she?
Generally, yeah, they're pretty proud of it.
I mean, seriously, I think about the idea of research, right?
Does your child tell you when he's going to the bathroom?
Not always.
It's part of, like, growing up, right?
Depends if paperwork's required, maybe.
Yeah, I think one of the more controversial aspects of Hello Barbie, for example, is that we are capturing voice, kid voice, right? And you know, there's kind of been a lot of conversation in the press over the last several months about, you know, kind of protection of that data and privacy issues. But, you know, using that information, you know, and we have another product coming out this fall called Smart Toy Bear, you know, understanding what a girl wants to talk about or what a boy wants to talk about and how they're playing with the product is really important, because if we have not created content, if we have not created play to satisfy that demand or that need or that story element, we can update that after the fact, right? Yeah. Being connected, you know, is many things, but being connected allows you to continue delivering new, fresh content after, you know, they've purchased the product, whether it's embedded like Hello Barbie or app, or, you know, tied to an app like Furby Boom or other. You know, I think it's, you know, understanding what they're talking about, understanding how they're using your product is really important, you know, as you continue to add value.
Especially since, as somebody who's gone through plenty of play tests, as I'm sure many people on this panel and out in the audience have done, with a younger audience, it's not always easy to understand exactly what they're looking for, what's missing for them in the experience. So the analytics definitely helps that.
Yeah, I think also, you know, they're designers are actually taking a very proactive approach, I believe, in thinking about what data they're collecting in order to protect kids. It's something that now is, I believe, part of design and development, and you can look at, like, Elemental Path with Cognitoys that's just coming out. You know, they've learned from some of the press that happened even with Barbie to say, well, how do we actually still connect to toys and be innovative, but also have, like, a call where they have to actually act in order to have that call and receive.
And Aaron, from an academic perspective, you know, how have kids evolved, right? When you look at like what research in the toy marketplace used to be versus like what it is now, and always looking forward, and forward is always changing. You know, what do we know about kids that we didn't know before, and like and how does that apply, you know, in the science and the academic part of it?
Yeah. So when I look at play patterns, I think that the play patterns that have been around historically forever are still there. They're just being reimagined, right? Kids still want to be creative. They still want prolonged interactions with their toys. They still want to be resourceful and have kind of that open-ended play where they can be imaginative. But, you know, when I kind of think about it, I go to like a race car or a ball, you know, those are ones that have had prolonged interactions. A doll, all of those are just being re-envisioned. So with a ball, you can pitch it, catch it, throw it, but you can also control it from this. And it's not that it is replacing it. It's just actually, you know, connecting to a new thing they think is a toy.
Joby's just looking at his phone very intensely. He was like, put my phone down.
I was going to throw it.
Yeah. Well, that's actually an interesting thing you learn about kids, like where their barriers are in terms of like a sense of ownership. When do they want to have a sense of ownership on something? When they want to identify it as theirs personally versus something they want to share. But you just touched on a really interesting thing that I think we kind of have to periodically relearn, is how much kids want freedom in the experience.
Yeah.
They want like a sense of challenge and rewards, which linear gameplay gives people, a real design linear game gives a good flow. But games like Minecraft also really powerfully remind us how badly they want to just get let loose in a toy store and just have their imagination go wild.
I think, you know, all of those things have changed. You talk about, you know, kids evolving. I think their expectations have evolved more than anything. And those expectations are that they want to connect on a deeper level. They want to go deeper into these worlds. They want to be able to take ownership and create. I think those expectations are, you know, things that we have to consider and design for.
I think the expectation now raises more and more that kids want their toys to be alive.
Yeah.
A good example is, you've probably all seen that video where the kid was playing with a magazine, and they had just been playing with an iPad, and they're trying to take the magazine and kind of like swipe and scroll the pages, right? I think there's an expectation from a very young age that things are very reactive.
Right. You actually just search child and TV online, and you'll see many, many pictures of a young kid going up and trying to swipe.
I have grease stains down my TV.
So the way I look at that is like the fundamental lesson is the expectation of additional dimensions of freedom enabled by the technology.
Yeah, well, you talk about touching the screen, right? And you know, there's been a lot of dialogue around this idea of how much connectivity to the technology a kid may have versus connectivity to humanity, right? Being able to like bridge the gap between, there is definitely a psychological disconnect that happens with too much screen time or too much engagement with technology versus just like, touch a real person. I don't know who to start with, but I would love just hear some
sounds
insight.
Like something she should probably take a crack at.
What is the question?
Where do you stop, right? How much screen time is too much screen time? How much technological interaction? Or are there mechanisms even built into toys that push kids towards?
Too much screen time. I mean, even the American Pediatrician Association just came out with a report that was saying that it's kind of the wrong conversation to be having. Yeah. It's not about too much screen time, no matter what the age. It's about actually what are they doing with that technology? Is it affording play? Is it affording learning? It's not about that it's an evil anymore, which we saw in media literacy 30 years ago. You know, this is not about violence and only violence. There can be some really positive things in regards to learning. Look at Sesame Street. We all learned from Sesame Street as a kid. So now we have not just television shows to actually educate us, engage us, play. We have everything is coming to life. Our toys are coming to life. And so why blame technology for that? It's really about, are you actually letting the kids, you know, play with each other and play with your parents? You know, are the parents engaged in the experience? Are you leaving them to their own devices, or are you having conversations with how they're playing and what they're playing and why they're motivated to play with these things?
Anyone else?
Yeah, I think she stated it well. I mean, technology is amazing. Technology allows you to do a ton of different things. I think it's the end of the day, for me, it's going to be a choice as a parent, you know, each family to kind of, you know, control, you know, what they think is the right mix of experiences, and whether it's isolating or not. I think our goal is to use technology to, you know, encourage play, and whether that's, you know, by yourself or with your friends or with your parents. You know, and then it's just a function of family. And
I'd say everything probably we're trying to do is to use the device or the software on the device to get kids to play with toys again, or get kids to play with toys more. And that's definitely something that, you know, I'm trying to do within my group, is use the experience we're creating to inspire or motivate the kids to get back to buying a toy, playing with a toy, scanning a toy into the game when they're playing a game, but to really engaging in the physical components as well.
There's also just an emotional comfort element to this. You know, I wouldn't pretend that at the beginning of designing the Anki Drive products, which is like basically race cars enabled by AI, that we were thinking that much about this. But in playtests, one of the biggest surprises was when families would come in to play, how much they praised the aspect of, wow, it's like a video game, but where my kid is still emotionally available. Yeah. Versus, you know, I mean, I know that when a kid is looking like they're zombified and their eyes are glued to the screen, that there's actually a lot going on in there. As a designer, I'm not too worried about that, but I understand the impact that it has on parents, where they feel like the kid is off in some phantom zone and they don't understand what's going on in there. You know, so I don't know what that says about what's right or wrong about these play patterns, but certainly from an emotional comfort in society with accepting and adopting new technologies, that's very potent.
And with the level of technology, like obviously increasing, and the more you're integrating tech into the toys, are parents being left behind? You know, and how do you educate? Like, as I'm sure most parents, like AI, well, like what? Like, you know, they think of Haley Joel Osment, and then like suddenly, like they're gonna cry and leave him in a forest. Yeah. But I just watched the movie the other day. But no,
you like, all know the scene.
You all know the script. You know, how do you, you know, maybe from the larger brands, but how do you go about educating the parents, or is there even a need to?
I actually think that the first thing parents need to do is give themselves permission to play. That, you know, we're so nervous that all of this new technology is coming in and that I don't know it, but we don't need to be the expert in the room. We can actually be a guide on the side and let the children kind of guide the experience for us and follow them. And that really fosters collective intelligence in the home, you know, where you let them lead and you follow.
But I think also if there's parents who either don't want to play with their kids or can't play with their kids, and that's a problem. And, you know, that's something that, you know, a toy company is going to struggle to try and fix. But, you know, what we do see is that a lot of kids will engage their parents in what they're doing, will engage their parents in, you know, the toy experience or the game experience. And I think, you know, what we can do is design for co-play and design for ways for parents to get involved. You know, speaking just experience of my daughter and my wife got stuck playing the My Little Pony game because my daughter needed currency in the game to buy gems and everything like that. So I didn't see my wife for a couple of weeks because she was playing that game. So I do think that, you know, that built a connection between my wife and my daughter, and they did play the game, but then they played separately as well. So I think that technology can do that. I think toys can do that too.
Well, you think about the idea of like kid demand, right? And like I remember Saturday morning cartoons. I'd be like, "Oh, I want the He-Man thing." Like that was what I would pester, you know, my parents for. Yeah. You know, from a marketing standpoint, how have strategies changed? Because, you know, there's less television time, or maybe I'm wrong on that. But you know, the touch points or the entry points by which we can reach kids has changed.
Yeah, I mean, it's just completely fragmented, right? Yeah. I think our jobs, any industry, it used to be just a commercial run on Saturday mornings, right? And that would drive, and you'd know when the return would start hitting. You'd know when your sales would go up based on what you marketed that day. And now it's, you know, I think 1,000 fragmented platforms where kids are continually shifting their focus. And, you know, it's just about kind of pivoting and being, you know, being agile, and where you kind of, you're focusing on a given time period. I mean, you know, obviously as toy companies, we're marketing to the kid. We're also still marketing to mom, right? The purchaser, you know, and so we kind of have to try to hit as many spots as possible. And, you know, depending on the product or the you know, what you're trying to communicate, you pick your platform and customize your message.
It is interesting though that television still does seem to be the most potent avenue.
Still,
it's kind of amazing to me that given that there's all these statistics about kids under a certain age are spending far more time watching YouTube, and yet still emotionally, television is the most potent avenue. That said, we do spend a lot more of our time working with YouTube, you know, the various YouTube celebrities out there. And one of the great things about that is that the more you try to do something that's an innovative new kind of experience, it's demonstrating a new kind of play pattern, is that the YouTube stuff, I think, gives us new opportunities to show how the thing is fun. Where on television you get 15 to 30 seconds and a whole new play pattern. Like, we had a huge problem with this with Skylanders. How do you show the whole thing of put the toy on the portal and it comes to life and why that's cool? But with YouTube, we can send out early copies to a bunch of YouTube influencers, and we don't tell them how to play with it. We just go, hey, we believe this is fun. We hope you do too. And then they figure out how to tell their audience about it. Just really kind of an amazing new dynamic.
Really important with new platforms. You know, when there's a lot of explaining, there's a lot of messaging, there's a lot of things you have to communicate. You do have a lot more freedom, you know, with longer format like YouTube.
I call YouTube University Tube, especially for kids, right? Yeah. Because the top three YouTube channels are for kids. Granted, the first two are unboxing, which still to me is crazy. But like the sixth one is Minecraft, and it's very much about teaching people. What I think is really interesting about all of this, though, is this new notion of emotional scheduling. So it's not about, like, Saturday morning cartoons and everything. Kids can watch anytime, anywhere. But now that we can collect all this type of data, how do we know when do they want to play with your toy? When are they engaging collectively as a group versus individually or with their parents? And that's something to really start looking at, is there certain times when we should be posting a YouTube video to get them more excited or change the way we think about marketing.
Yeah, that's another important dynamic anytime you're dealing with physical thing, because there tends to be some physical setup involved versus I'm watching YouTube and I'm getting advertised to about something, or I can just app switch over and I'm playing the app immediately with physical product. There is more thinking that has to go into, like, the context in the day of the user and when the message is actually going to, you know, drive them back to the play.
Yeah. And where they are in the context.
So our approach is a little bit different. Yeah, we see TV commercials being less and less effective throughout time because of fast forward. So what we've tried to do is create the digital component of our experiences, make them playable on their own. And once they're playable on their own, once there's a core loop in that play experience, firstly, you get a better chance of, you know, the likes of Apple and Google promoting it. But also, the kid's involved. They're engaged. They're involved in something that's, there's no barrier to download. It's free. They can play for periods of time. They can come back and they play ongoing if it's designed right. And as they're going through that experience, they start to understand the importance of the toy or the need for the toy or how much the toy is going to make this experience better. And that really drives, you know, them to convert to a purchase of the toy.
You guys kind of all touched on this, the idea of, you know, there's a learning that happens when a kid engages with a certain particular toy, whether it's a skill set or a social skill or, you know, even robotics, whatever, right? And then we think about the classroom, where a kid spends 9 months of his or her, you know, year, 5 days a week. Why is there, at least I haven't seen it, enough bridging the gap between the classroom and what toys are actually capable of doing now?
So I'll give kind of an outsider perspective on that as a high school dropout. You know, I think there's a lot of fear about changing that system, right? I know a lot of people who are deeply invested and deeply involved in things like a Glass Lab, who are all about trying to change how education works. But there's a lot of emotion that comes along with that. And for every one person, from my perspective, that is deeply interested in and actively working on changing how education works, it seems like there's tenfold that many that are, you know, interested in keeping the status quo. It's a really tricky issue, and of course people are deeply concerned, rightfully so, about how their kids are being educated. So it's a tough one, and I think it's just going to be something that over time, certain approaches are going to be demonstrably more effective and more fun, and have kids coming back talking to their parents for a change about what they saw in school, and instead of it having to be a conversation where we all feel as parents we have to pull teeth to figure out, like, what did you do in school today? I don't know.
Well, it's also like all these outside groups, like I forget the gentleman's name, but from Discovery Education, who's been here, and like it's usually an outside group that goes into the school, which has its own sort of logistical, you know, thing. Or like, do either Hasbro or Mattel have programs where you go into the school, or is that even like a thing that's on your radar?
Yeah, yeah. Well, a couple things. By no means an expert, but you know, look, I think you're starting to see, obviously, with the massive focus on STEAM or STEM education, I think you're starting to see, you've always seen big technology companies trying to, you know, get into education. You've got Google and all the 3D printing companies and, you know, various folks, you know, bringing technology to bear and kind of investing for the long run in getting folks on their platforms, hopefully disrupting education a little bit along the way. But I think a lot of kind of the trend now is play is actually, you know, an assist in helping folks learn, right? Immersing themselves hands-on. You know, Google just launched a program called Expeditions, which you know, essentially is the AV kit for today's classroom, which delivers viewers and phones and a tablet, allowing teachers to take their kids virtually to, you know, all over the world and underwater and teach them and bring them along the way. So I think technology and play are huge elements in learning. I think one of the challenges, potentially, my opinion with being a for-profit company like a Mattel or a Hasbro, is how do you walk the line of being there and being a part of that, but not looking like we're marketing to kids in a school. Yeah. So I think it's, you know, for us, we're actually part of the Google Expeditions program. We've donated our viewers, the ViewMaster viewers. That's just like, you know, you kind of, it's not a marketing tool, but, you know, it may end up being a benefit for the company, but it's a really fine line being, you know, there and being part of play, but not looking like you're selling yourself in the educational context.
I think also as a for-profit company, it's hard to apportion resources against those types of things because the revenue isn't there, right? So that's just a tough one from a big company. I'd actually say that Lego have done a phenomenal job globally around the world getting toys into schools, getting kids playing and creating and, you know, working together to build stuff. And obviously, you know, here it's going to be driven by the STEAM mission, but throughout Europe, you know, Lego's in schools everywhere. Yeah.
And Aaron, you're actually inside of an educational institution.
Yeah, and I've used Lego many a times in my classrooms and workshops that we do at the lab. But a few years back, we actually did a lot in the classroom. It was called PLAY. And we defined that as, it was an acronym for Participatory Learning in You. And some of the activities that we actually did was, instead of, was told the teachers, just come with a toy, you know, bring a toy. Like, we wanted them to start not only giving themselves permission, but what toys actually would they want to bring into the classroom. And they didn't know what to do with it at first, but you really kind of offer this open learning, and a group brought some origami sets. And they realized that they could take on role playing and be like, oh, I could role play as a chemist, and I could use origami to figure out like polymers and molecule things. I'm not a scientist, but I was like, amazing! You're playing. Look, you're taking something that you wouldn't think would be in the classroom and using it for a different purpose.
That's what I think is really interesting about some of the trends I see in education, is that recognition of just trying to expose kids to a lot of things through play, and then letting them figure out what really lights their fire. Because that's what killed it for me in school, as it was being taught in the 70s at least, is once I got a field trip to the library in second grade, I was like, why would I ever want to go anywhere but this place? I can learn whatever the heck I want at my pace. Why would I go back to the normal classroom? So to me, that's like going to be part of the future of education, is finding ways, whatever education can learn from games, about letting kids explore what they're really interested in and then getting them on some kind of challenge reward loop.
Yeah. That's interesting too, because you talk about like you as an individual, right? Your whole thing was like the style of learning that you were experiencing in school didn't necessarily speak to you. And so when you talk about designing like educational experience or designing play experience, there has to be a little bit from a business standpoint, one to many. How do you account for the nuances and individuality as you're designing like mass products?
Boy, that is one of the
too heavy
challenges.
All right, let's move on.
Yeah. It's not something that becomes a priority when you're working on mass market products. Unfortunately, I mean, it sounds terrible, but it's not. You know, I think you're focused on creating engagement, and what we call at Hasbro is play with benefits. So we're trying to implement, features that allow kids to develop both cognitively and physically through play. And trying to find the right messaging that sort of helps people understand that, playing Nerf gets kids active and gets kids moving and playing together. Trying to find messages like that and think about that, but without it becoming a key feature that you're selling.
Yeah. I guess if I had to give one simple fundamental answer, it'd be I find there's a lot of benefits to keeping a mentality of fun first. Because what is fun ultimately? That's a deep question, but I think evolution has seen to it. We find certain things fun, even if we don't understand why. And so I kind of let evolution be a little bit of the guide through how we see whether or not a certain activity is fun. And we try to find the fun that is most universal. And then you can bring the parents and educators and everybody else along, especially if you then give them the tools via an SDK to figure out how they can tune your new brand of fun for their particular context.
And you're also in danger of losing the fun if you focus too much on it being a learning experience.
Yeah, I agree. I think that there's some key ingredients that really make for fun. I look to Legos, right? It's open-ended, mm-hmm. but it also can be scaffold. You can create patterns with it, but you can also do your own thing. Yeah. They're now connecting it to a game. So those type of giving some structure, but also giving some open-ended allows for a variety of different mindsets, mindsets to come to the table.
And I would just add quickly, it's really software, right? We talk about how do you do it with mass injection molded product. It's probably not, right? You look at Lego, they make bricks. It's really software, and it's really folks teaching coding with software. I mean, you have a lot more flexibility in a piece of software to kind of serve many consumers or many students, more effectively, I think.
Well, one last question before we go into Q&A, because you guys are all super business-minded and successful and SVPs and so on and so forth. How do you keep your childlike wonder on a day-to-day basis, right? Because you have so many business goals to answer. You're looking for technology and, looking at the data and so on and so forth. But at some point, fun is a big word that keeps coming up. How do you keep that childlike of curiosity?
We make toys. Yeah, right. I mean, we could be doing this in any industry, but we get to make toys. Obviously seeing our products in the hands of our consumers really changes your mentality. But for me, I don't have a long history in this space. I came from a technology background. So we're making toys at the end of the day, and it's all about play, which is exciting.
Try not to grow up. My wife hates me for that, but I haven't grown up. So, a little bit. But I think environment's important. Having a group in an environment where they can play and play as part of the work and it's not frowned upon is important. I think in any company, regardless of whether it's toy or the play industry or not, I think providing impetus for them to sort of get out and not just get focused on the job is really important.
I try to just look in the mirror, and if I look sad before I'm going to work, I take that as a sign. Try to respect the boredom. Seriously, a lot of times you spend months working on some features, and you're like, we're doing everything by the check boxes, right? This is where the market research is telling us, but dudes, I'm playing it. It's not fun.
That's the thing. Yeah. You have a checkbox.
Yeah. Yeah. If it's too checkboxable, that's also
you're
not
a supposed
great
to have checkboxes. Yeah. That's a Mattel and a Hasbro.
Yeah.
Thing.
At some point, you have to listen to your boredom.
Yeah, I'd say be curious, ask any question. I'm probably the best and worst playtester for anyone here because I will touch everything, even if you don't want me to. But then I'll ask questions, and they'll be dumb and smart, but at least I ask them.
That's a great one. Yeah, I think if you're not asking, if the experience isn't leading you to ask new questions, that's also not a great sign.
What a great segue. Speaking of asking questions, done. Jonathan Taplin. Tappen.
Hello. I'm going to direct this kind of at Aslan and Dan, and maybe some to Chris as well. So we talked about the old marketing thing of Saturday morning commercials, push, and the idea of a blockbuster toy. But you've described these ways that people find things through YouTube and
App Store,
and much more subtle. Yeah. Are your companies more willing to be patient in seeing a kind of organic development people?
Good question.
I love the expressions in the audience.
No,
no, right? I think we're evolving. I can obviously speak for us. I think there's man, this industry is very trend-based and immediate, and it's pretty wild that most of our company is working on something 18 that'll be on shelf 18 months from now. And if you miss, you miss. We turn over 70% of our toy lineup every single year. So it's pretty wild. But I think with some of the stuff that at least my team is focusing on, we are building platforms. We're investing, you know, in continuing to iterate and learn. But it's an evolution internally for sure.
Yeah. And I'll answer from an agency perspective because Hasbro is a client, right? And in any of our clients, we look at this idea of like, when is it going to launch, right? You say 18 months or whatever. Our job is to look at culture at that point in time and say, all right, what does the thing do? What is it, you know, what does it stand for, et cetera, et cetera? And then try to align that with, it might be YouTube. It might, like, it could be Minecraft. It could just be like whatever's going to be hot at that window of launch. And it's easier with like staid brands, you know, like a Transformers or like, but if it's something new and we're always kind of like looking to where can we align culturally and do things special with the products.
Yeah. And one of the things, it wasn't a Mattel product, but Rainbow Loom, right, is a great example of being patient, right? I think it was out, I don't know the exact numbers. It was out for a long time. And, you know, I think, you know, it finally blew up when a couple people started, you know, showing how to make things with Rainbow Loom, and then it became viral on YouTube. But Would a Mattel or a Hasbro have been there after 6-12 months? You know, I think it's obviously a different perspective from an Anki or someone that's VC funded. You've got some patience and you've kind of got a time to get there.
Let's move to question number two. Sorry, young lady. Sorry, Dad.
What is the longest you've tested the same product that had a continual game behind it? What's the longest testing? I know you guys do consumer testing right when it's coming up. Mm-hmm. How
long from the launch?
Yes, so did you go 6 months later, revisited it, because okay, you were checking out what version 2.0 or 3.0 yeah was doing?
I mean, I worked on games that took 3.5 years to develop, and we were testing them by 18 months in, so you could say it was 2 years of testing and iteration. I mean, I think for those of us on the development side, you know, you want as much of that as you can get, has been my experience.
Yeah. You're talking post-launch?
Oh, I see.
Yeah. So, you know, you may be more aligned with this, you know, with software-based, app-based kind of metrics.
It's rare that we do that much testing after launch, but when we have, it's been really, really useful. I think one thing that we found that I'm very proud of was with Furby Boom, our post-market research with parents about 3 months after the launch, maybe four, was that parents were thrilled that they'd spent this significant amount of money on a toy, but the kids were still playing with it 3 months later.
Yeah.
And it breaks my heart when you see an expensive toy, you know, being bought and it's, you know, over $100 and kids will play with it for 3 days and it goes on a shelf and becomes a nice piece of room decor. I mean, that's just not good for the environment or, you know, anyone really. So I think that was really fulfilling. So we are starting to do more tests to make sure that we're achieving those goals and getting that feedback.
Got time for one more from this? Oh, you have a question. I thought you were telling me there's 5 minutes left. But all right. You did not pay me to say that, correct?
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, it makes it relevant and personalized as well. You know, I mean, millennials are the kids that actually grew up as the generation of readers of Harry Potter. And you can see that social activism with the HP Alliance, the Harry Potter Alliance, which, you know, they have done, they pretty much created the real Dumbledore's army. And what would Dumbledore do? And is like, literally not only brought it in the classroom to get more reading happening, but also brought it out to get Warner Brothers to do fair trade chocolate in all the Hogwarts stores at Universal Studios. It's been pretty amazing.
I'm going to do one last question, and I'm going to go to Dylan's dad because I'm such a fan. Mm-hmm. I'm also jealous. As a parent of a 10-year-old, I'm like, oh, I missed the... I fucked up.
So the question, I mean, Chris, what you said a little bit earlier about the He-Man and Saturday morning cartoons and platform sort of fragmentation, I'm sort of interested in that topic because Hasbro, Mattel, I mean, these companies drive significant toy sales against fantastic content that is seen over and over again on the big networks, you know, whether it be Cartoon or Disney, et cetera. How are we in this age of platform fragmentation looking at being able to move as many sales, this is just, I guess, just a straight sort of financial question, move as many sales given there's so much fragmentation? You know, is Netflix proving to be a significant content model where you can drive toy sales against? Is Amazon, you know, listening to Terry yesterday, she's got all these great sort of shows coming out, but they're not, I mean, the eyeballs are not such that they suggest there could be a really robust toy program.
Well, one way to look at that is there's an explosion of companies where their sole focus is taking markets and companies and helping to guide where your marketing spend is going. That's their whole job, is doing analytics and just, yeah, trying to talk you as a potential advertiser into giving them a budget, and then they do, you know, there's like a whole buffet approach that a lot of these companies do where their preference is to get you to just give them a bucket of money, and then you tell them who your audience is, and they figure out how to find the eyeballs and where they are, when they are. You know, so I mean, that just tells you something about how deep of a problem this has become.
Anyone else? All right, thank you guys. This is great.
Thank you.
We'll be right back.